Today's sponsor is Audible. With an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more, get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial at www.audible.com/baldmove. Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 7, Episode 10, titled New Best Friends. What did you think of this episode, Aaron?
This is another... It was a bizarre episode. I was entertained, but mostly because I had one of my best friends beside me, and we were just ripping it the whole time.
Yeah.
And what's so funny is how kind of universal the episode was received. Like, I got on the Walking Dead forum or subreddit, and people, like the top-rated comments were all like, did the writers just want to write a Star Trek episode? What the hell? Because it just felt like early-going Season 1, Season 2 Star Trek The Next Generation, just like some weirdo planet where they speak in weird gobbledygook sentences and... You know, you got this grand Romulan admiral with her bull haircut intoning crazy shit and talking about showing Rick the up, up, up. And
yeah, it was. But so we got independently, we got emails in that they weren't watching our live watch,
sure.
But they said this feels like a bad Star Trek episode. And
I'm telling
you, they're 100% right on. Like, everybody across the board knew it.
Yeah.
I don't believe that the people making the show couldn't tell. So are they trying to do that? Are they trying to get super campy with it?
That's one of the things I was joking about on the live watch. Like, you know, they're cracking their knuckles like, oh, we've just gotten by on inexperience and incompetence. But now we're really going to try to make a bad episode and see what you think. I got to say that this was more entertaining than like the Oceanside episode, which was very Star Trek The Next Generation in concept and just boring. This at least wasn't boring. It was kind of hilarious.
Okay. I mean, on my second watch through, so I saw this once during the live watch. Watched the whole thing. On my second watch through, I literally skipped these scenes because I don't care to see it again. This is fucking garbage.
Yeah.
This is, I'm going to say without a doubt, the worst thing The Walking Dead has ever done. It's terrible. Because at least the Glenn dumpster fire, like they couldn't have known that it would be such a huge, crazy thing. Like, it might have been an interesting idea if they had pulled it off better, but this is just fucking trash.
It's debatable what's the worst thing, but, like, it's just really puzzling, because I did watch it, and I actually was, the second time through, it wasn't as funny, as more just like, what the fuck? Like, why does Rick just trust these crazy people? Like, it seems like these people, if they overthrow the saviors, will be just as bad, if not worse. Like, how is throwing someone to some prickly pine zombie better than beating their heads in with a baseball bat?
Right.
Like, it's better in maybe a two-faced sense of the word, that you can flip a coin and maybe survive it, but like that, and like, why were they directing T'Pol or whatever the fuck her name was to act like she wanted to eat Rick? Like you know, she's just licking her lips and like wanting to dick him down.
Yeah,
like it's just such
wanted
weird
his life force. It's
like, add his biological distinctiveness to her own. I don't know, man. It was crazy, but I laughed a lot the first time I watched it.
And I did too, but I couldn't stand to watch it again. I thought it was absolute garbage. This also could have been a lot shorter. Like there,
it
sucks because one of the coolest zombies they've ever done, maybe,
sure,
was mixed in with this heap of trash. Well, the literal and figurative heap of burning trash.
There are some quite good scenes with Morgan and Daryl, and Daryl and Carol. But then, like, to your point, to where when things get too long, like the scene with Richard, this confrontation with Daryl, like, I couldn't fucking believe what I was seeing. That's a 5-minute scene that shouldn't be more than two. Like, they literally have three complete arguments where they restate their position. 3 times. 3 times they had the argument where they said the same things.
Yeah.
3 times was the number in which they said the things that they'd said before. That's exactly how that scene went.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, and it's
I do know. It's hot garbage.
Well, I think this episode is actually a mixed bag. It's not terrible as a whole, but no. There are parts in it which are some of the absolute worst garbage I've ever seen.
And literally, it takes place in a garbage dump. Yeah. The new best friends, everything about that is hot garbage. All the stuff with Daryl and Carol I thought was really good.
Yes.
Half the stuff with Daryl and Morgan was pretty good.
Yep.
And then the Daryl Richard bromance that lasted, you know, not even a commercial break, that was pretty bad too.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it propelled the plot forward. But with fucking Kirkman, man, like, you told this story once and it was compelling and there wasn't any fucking Deus Ex Machina with trash people involved. It was a story of communities of like-minded people coming together to resist evil. You know, tried and true, formulaic maybe, but the fucking worked. What the hell is this Mad Max shit, man?
This tangent could have been okay if they did like absolutely everything completely differently. If it wasn't just terrible.
Yeah.
I feel bad for like some of the serious actors in here. Like Seth Gilliam is in there just delivering the clunkiest fucking dialogue I've ever heard a human being spit out, and I feel bad for the guy.
As he's holding a 2-bit Romulan extra hostage, that
right?
Knife point, which makes no sense. I don't know.
It's almost like the cheesiness and shittiness of these characters rubbed off on our main actors in that scene. Like, how could it not, I guess?
Well, we should probably get right into it because I don't want to waste all of our ammo in the preamble of the conversation that we're about to have.
Sure.
Shall we get right into the episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we are at a kingdom drop off the saviors, and they show up, and they're a bunch of assholes again. This Jared guy in particular is starting shit up with Richard. Discuss.
Okay. I don't understand the philosophy of. It's not your fault, but make sure he stops it. Like,
I know. It's
how do you tell the guy who isn't instigating anything to stop the instigating?
And also he has to keep
fix the situation.
I mean, they just want Richard to just take whatever shit that Jared dishes out.
Right.
And the real problem is I don't know why they cast this head of this particular branch of saviors to be the blandest, most milquetoast, douchiest guy ever, because say what you will about Negan, charisma. Say what you will about his right-hand man. I forget what that guy's name. The handlebar mustache from Westworld. Charisma. This guy is, like, way below replacement level, and he needs to be better if he's going to be... Like, you give him good lines, like, read the goddamn room, Sensei, but he looks like some kind of frustrated high school women's volleyball coach, and it just doesn't work for me, man.
Yeah, yeah. It looks real hard, like he's trying to ape Rick's look. Like, he's got the same hair, the same beard, a little bit of the same face.
Let's try to describe that man. He's the default setting for white guy, for middle-aged white guy.
Mm-hmm.
He is a bowl of tapioca pudding. And, you know, Jared's a giant douchebag and an asshole. And it's not clear to me why he's getting away with it, because this guy is, like, giving him shit and clearly doesn't like what he's doing.
Mm.
But he's just letting it happen because... And, like, he comes up, he's like, oh, looks like you guys are a little light. Oh, check again. Yay, verily.
Yeah.
Oh, one, two, yep. I don't know what he's counting. Right. I don't know what the deal is.
Watermelons, I guess.
Yeah, he brought 10 watermelons? Gas? There are not 10 fucking gas cans in here. Like, why should I care about any of this shit? I don't understand the stakes, so I don't understand the bad guy macho stuff. And
yeah. Like, all this stuff is bad.
And also,
bad.
Why is Ezekiel taking this, like, hard line? Like, everyone's sitting there and jaws clenched and muscles quivering on both sides of the confrontation. Like, Ezekiel should be coming in, like, a lot, like, with a whole different mental attitude if he wants this thing to be, like, the submissive kind of rollover thing that he's trying to preach to Richard. I don't get it. I really don't.
I mean, it does feel like Richard is barely under his grasp anymore.
Right.
Like, Richard is pushing for things that Ezekiel clearly doesn't want.
Oh, he's rebelling.
Right. But even in, not behind the scenes even, you know, now he's rebelling kind of up front during these exchanges. And it has the potential to get everybody killed. And I don't know why Ezekiel isn't putting his foot down a little harder. Like, he tries to here, but then that guy's like, nah, I want him here because what? Because I fucking like his face?
So,
what?
So this isn't a microcosm a lot of what's wrong with The Walking Dead. Diane, who I didn't even know her name before this episode.
It's the one with the sister is with
talking
the dress.
About her sister and her dress, and that's like something, but they never come back to it, so I don't know what it means. There's several lines
they
of
They do, though, at the end of the scene, or I think it's the end of the scene, where she's like, oh, yeah, my sister loved that dress. Like, they say it twice, implying that maybe that was her sister.
Maybe, but who knows? Who knows? Yeah. Why? So unless I know for sure, what the hell is it doing? Is it trying to build her character? I don't know anything more about her than I did, other than like, well, then maybe that's just a fucking JCPenney dress and a million women bought it and she's just making some kind of... I don't get it. Also, when the generic tapioca bad guy says, this has got to stop, or, you know, maybe things need to get a bit more visceral. What the fuck does that mean? Is he saying that Ezekiel should go home and beat the piss out of Richard?
I think he's saying he might kill somebody, and Richard's first up on the list.
But he already said like you need three different ways to threaten a person.
I guess, yeah.
Like
you look like and act like that guy, I suppose. I don't know. So
it's dumb. But he did, you know, when Morgan tries to get a stick back from Jared to read the goddamn room sensei, it's pretty good.
It's a good line.
Anytime Morgan gets taken down a peg, I feel like that's a good thing.
Okay.
They get back to the kingdom, and Ezekiel observes that young Benjamin was too quick with his stick. Something very many young men struggle with. Yep. A bit too quick with their stick. and Daryl confronts Morgan, wants to know what the hell is wrong with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Morgan tries to explain for the 30th time his position on Morgalizing, and Daryl takes him to task and says, if Carol knew the things you knew, she'd be back here and she'd be leading us all to the gates of hell. And Morgan shoots back, she would, which is why she left. Which, that's going to come full circle by the end of the episode.
Right, so I like kind of how this episode is setting up the next arc for Carol, because I don't think anybody here in this room or listening to this believes that Carol is not coming back to rejoin this fight.
No.
Or I'm afraid going to pay the ultimate price, right, at the hands of these fools.
Right, because like, they've unnecessarily, I think, painted this character into the corner. Maybe Melissa wants out. That would be very... I mean, it sounds like a lot of people in the show kind of are like, hey, when are we done here?
A
10 years of my life making this, can I... Is there a point where I can tap out?
Yeah, and go make the next Star Trek sequel.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
Yeah, but I like what... So, you know, we're kind of beyond the phase of Morgalizing that I really disliked, which was him just being staunchly anti-killing.
Right.
Now he has more of a measured approach to it, and I think they're doing a lot of interesting things here, both with Daryl and Carol.
Yeah.
And this triangle, right, between the three of them.
I like how they're using Carol's struggle to maintain her humanity / you know, sanity, which is a well-worn hobby horse at this point in The Walking Dead, to tell us something new, or not even new, but just something interesting about her relationship with Daryl, or Daryl's relationship with her.
Yeah, and you know, how people are people willing to help her out with that, or are they going to be just realists and say, we need Carol in this fight? And, you know, by the end, Daryl has certainly made a decision there.
Speaking of getting Carol into the fight, Daryl stumbles upon Richard, who's learning how to shoot bows, and boy, howdy, someone needs to show him how, because...
Yeah, well, he's a gun guy.
He's doing the whole pinch the arrow and pull it back, and it's just terrible.
He's a gun guy. He pinches his triggers that way, too.
Yeah, well, go find the one-legged girl that looks like she knows what she's doing and have her show you how to properly draw a bow, dude.
Or maybe Daryl.
Daryl's like, well, I do the crossbow, man.
Right.
He gives Daryl back a crossbow and then explains to him his grand plan of going and ambushing saviors and essentially forcing Ezekiel's hand. And his plan was to stage a trail so that it led back to the weapons cache that his fortress of Richardtude we've joked about in the past few weeks. And then from there, it's going to lead back to Carol's cabin. The saviors will fall upon her and annihilate her, which will provoke Ezekiel into action, since he apparently loves Carol enough that they would do that.
Yeah, I guess so.
And Daryl finds out it's Carol that they're using for bait. I think Daryl would have had a problem with anyone being used for bait.
You think so?
I do. I really do.
I'm not sure about that.
It's one.
He was really adamant about the name. If he really wanted, like, to just prevent anyone from dying.
So what does that tell us about Daryl, then? He's just cool with some random person dying?
Yeah, he's cool with sacrifice, but that's too much. Too much. Carol's too close to him.
I don't know. I'm going to give him the benefit
of the
doubt.
Everybody has people like that,
like,
though.
He's ready to, like, okay, we're going to pace these saviors, and they're going to go off half-cocking his kingdom, and that will force Ezekiel's hand. Sacrificing someone who was not willing to be sacrificed, I think anyone would is where Daryl draws the line. Maybe I'm wrong. I just feel like he's too good a dude not to, or to be cool with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, what's the difference between you and the governor, or you and the saviors at that point?
I don't know.
I mean, is one of the...
Maybe there is such a thing as the greater good in that universe.
I wonder if there's going to be a plot point where some people defect. Like, if I could see Richard and Rosita defecting to the saviors at this point.
I see Ezekiel defecting, frankly, like, leaving his own kingdom.
Why?
Because, he doesn't seem... I don't know what it's going to take to move Ezekiel off his position. Because, honestly, like, I've never understood the real connection between him and Carol.
Right.
Like, why did they connect? I know they, had this little... moment together where she told him his story or whatever, but or he told her his story, but other than that there hasn't really been a connection except for pomegranates and cobbler. Like,
I mean, I think her strength is what attracts him to her, but they haven't done a real good job of explaining that.
Yeah,
but they also don't there's a lot of stuff about the king. Like, objectively, is the kingdom less silly than the trash people?
No, but the people in it are.
Okay. You've got one person that's acting crazy and everyone's going along with him because he's got a tiger versus everyone's deciding they're going to talk like, the planet trashy Alpha 5 or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, we know that Ezekiel's act is exactly that, right? It's a put on. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what these trash people's deal is at the moment, but by far it was stupider than the kingdom, in my opinion.
So anyway, as I said, Richard and Daryl had this argument, and it just goes on for fucking ever. And the only thing that makes it worth it is Daryl debuting his escalating, saying, nah. It starts off like, nah, nah, and then goes, nah, nah. Like, he goes to the nah and adds an ow, like someone kicked him in the balls in the middle of it. Nah!
Yeah.
It's classic. They struggle. Daryl recites the Godfather speech. That Don Vito Corleone gives to the other five families about his son Michael coming back to America.
Yep.
If anything should befall Carol, like, I thought it was the Godfather speech, and then he actually says, "Or if lightning should strike her, I'm going to kill you."
Mm-hmm.
And Richard says, "You don't understand. I'm willing to die for the kingdom." And then Daryl says, "Well, then why don't you?" And he's got a point. Like, if Richard just rode in and unilaterally pasted half of this road crew, and he's wearing the kingdom's armor, definitely the saviors would show up for retribution and it would force Ezekiel's hand. Mm-hmm. So as soon as he said that, I'm like, okay, this kind of seems dumber, because I don't think Richard's dumb, and if he really is that willing to die, then why the hell doesn't he just do it? Like, why not?
He's trying to make Ezekiel angry.
Mm-hmm.
He's not trying to get the saviors to attack Ezekiel out of the blue.
Okay.
So, like, he wants Ezekiel to change his mind. And, if the saviors come calling and they want to kill a few people, Ezekiel might see it as not worth fighting over, if they're going to kill a person or two. But if they kill the person that he's closest with, maybe. I feel like he should try and get Jerry killed.
There you go.
Like, that would really piss off Ezekiel, I think.
I just don't, like, I feel like blasting Jared in the face to do the same thing, Like, here, like this, because Ezekiel's right now is not doing this because he thinks that starting a war will get people killed. If Richard shows that not fighting the war gets people killed, then it becomes a much simpler mental calculus. People are going to die either way. Why not die in your feet rather than your knees?
Yeah, but, I mean, it'll be a temporary bump in the road if the saviors come calling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you, like, what happened with Glenn and Abraham,
mm-hmm.
that didn't ultimately kill everyone in the community, whereas starting a war could. So Ezekiel needs a damn good reason to start a war, and if Carol is that reason, then which the show is telling us, then I guess
Just guess that if the Saviors had shown to be even a little bit stable, but they seem to, and that's what I don't understand about them, they're always provocative. It's not like a shock and awe campaign, and then they back off, and
right.
like good cop, bad cop. It's just all bad cop all the fucking time. Mm-hmm. Like, you're daring people to rebel,
yep.
and I don't get it. I don't get it, but anyway, we then meet, again, as I mentioned, the people of Trashy Alpha 5. They lead Rick into their massive trash compound. They slowly encircle and ring them in some kind of weirdly choreographed scene that takes forever. Like, I thought they're
like
about
a minute and a half.
I thought they're about the dance fight, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, they start snapping their fingers. It's like, okay, Rick, show them what you got. The science officer from Galaxy Quest shows up and mm-hmm. asks, are you a collective or does one of you lead?
And she's got Maude's voice from The Big Lebowski.
And at this point, she looks like a poor man's Mia Jovovich uh-huh. in some of the latter really bad Resident Evil. She's got the uniform and the bowl haircut of a Romulan commander from Next Generation era Star Trek.
Yep. She's speaking like Maude mashed up with a bad
the Borg
Star
Queen.
Trek. Yep.
I mean...
And she's giving the cue finger gestures. Like, this could not be more of a Star Trek episode if they tried. And they might, in fact, be trying.
You know, I was thinking that same thing. Like, is this a rib at Sasha's expense? Because isn't
Sasha's
she in
expense?
The new Star Trek? Isn't she part of the new Star Trek crew?
Oh, I think you're right. I'm not sure. I haven't been keeping up on that.
Like, I wonder if this isn't, like, we're giving him shit for it. And rightfully so, because this is an Easter egg... is one thing.
Right.
This is some self-indulgent bullshit. These jokes are just for this one actor's expense, but...
Yeah.
Anyway...
Well, also, can we say that they essentially operate on the Prime Directive here? We take, we don't bother. Like,
sure.
If they don't know we're there, we're not going to move in and steal the guy's boat shit.
Right. Yeah.
This couldn't be more Star Trek.
It really is. It really is. Rick asks for proof of Gabriel's life. They give it to him. He explains that the Saviors own their lives and they're not free to give them. But if they want stuff from us, then to join us and fight against them. There's a scuffle breaks out where Gabriel miraculously ends up with a knife to Tamael's throat, which I'm pretty sure is the name of the dog demon from Hellboy. So check that box off your bullshit sci-fi bingo, too. Gabriel pleads with the chance to be allowed to demonstrate what this group can do. So then who we eventually come to appreciate as Jadis says that Rick is going to be shown the up, up, up.
Fuck me, man.
Yeah.
If I'm Andrew Lincoln, I'm going back to my trailer and I'm crying
yeah.
after every take.
Uh-huh.
I am weeping for the future of my career.
Right.
This was fucking terrible.
Like, he's calling John Bernthal and like, man...
You got out at the right time.
He's like, I should have read for your part because I could have been two and done.
Yep. Off to Wolf of Wall Street. I could have been doing some great shit.
I could have been the Punisher. I could have done Punisher.
Yep.
So she explains her take but don't bother philosophy, but they don't really explain it. She says, I mean, I'm seriously, her dialogue is, we take, we don't bother. We open can, sometimes inside is rotten. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra when the walls fall. And then she shoves Rick into the pit to determine his worth. And an admittedly cool Uruk-hai fighting zombie razor blade
super
thing
cool
comes
walker.
Out. And Rick fights it in ways that make me think that he's probably going to lose an arm or a leg because there's no tetanus shots in these worlds. And,
right.
But he
there's so much trash there. Couldn't he just grab trash and like start shoving
it at
it?
That's what he eventually did. Like Michonne's like, use the trash against it. And he's like, oh yeah, I can. And yeah Trash-a-lanch fells the zombie. And he wins. And but the fight is dumb. It's not cool. But the Romulan High Commander is impressed. Rick clambers up the trash pile with the help of some ropes. And she says, we'll help you, but we need guns, a lot of them. Rick grins in front of one of the worst CGI matte paintings I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Like, that's literally Next Generation era.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand how you can animate a tiger with fur and it looks real, and you can't execute a matte painting.
Right.
Like, I've seen him do it a bunch. I've seen him do it with, like, the fucking query. Did they just forget how? What the hell?
Maybe they just had an intern working on that. Like, I feel... I want to go back and I want to watch The Talking Dead for this episode because, oh my God, I feel so bad for Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
What do you do when AMC is writing you huge checks...
You cash
to do this show.
You cash them. You
hold
you put
your nose
on,
and you cash them.
You put on a tightly tailored suit and you...
Spike your hair and you cash
you
the
read,
checks.
You read the tweets to tell you to read. You make the jokes to tell you to make.
God.
Yeah.
Being on that couch with those guys. I couldn't have done it.
Because we saw the first 5 minutes or so while we were cleaning up the office and transitioning out of the live watch last night. And I thought he looked rattled.
How could you not?
Because he just spends 30 seconds essentially giving the IMDb summary of what the episode just was.
Yeah.
And he's got that kind of like, you know, pained expression, but like tight-eyed smile and like, oh, wow, yeah. Oh, what a, you know, what do you say? What do you say?
I thought you said tie-dye smile.
Yeah, no, that too.
Yeah, I don't know. That I feel for him.
The whole time... Rick is negotiating with Jadis. She acts like she just wants to jump his bones.
Yeah.
Like she wants to clamber up his trash pile and get up into his nasty nailed zombie business. Why?
I don't know.
Are they going to set up some weird ass love triangle between her?
Maybe.
I thought this was going like Merovingian from The Matrix. Like she's going to ask Rick for a kiss. I want to sample the love you have for her. It's just so fucking... How do these people get so weird? Society died 2 years ago. It's not been 200.
Yeah.
This isn't was there a nuclear bomb that went off on the East Coast that we don't know about and these people are radiated? Is there lead in their water? What the fuck?
They've been living off the grid for hundreds of years. They're just coming out of the woodwork now.
Is this the descendants of a bunch of fucking meth lab operators? I don't get why everyone is equal. They're all in on the fucking joke.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
So anyway, they negotiate a split of the spoils. She says their deal has an expiration date. This begs the question again, why does Rick trust that these people... Like, if Rick gives them a shit ton of guns, why don't they just pace the saviors and be the new weirder rulers?
Right. Or even kill the Alexandrians. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, or just kill everybody. Like, they don't bother. Like, well, you gave us all these guns, we're going to take. We're not going to bother. We're just going to take.
Right.
Like, I don't... I mean, This gives me the whole... remember the episode of the... I don't know what the aliens were, but they kidnapped Geordi because they look for things that make them go. Like, anytime a species gives you some kind of, like, we look for things to make us go, we take, we don't bother. Like, I'm like, I'm going to have to see some subsections of your policy because nothing in that assures me that you're not going to... shove your fist up my ass and take my intestines.
Well, it's tough. Without
bothering,
you know?
You know, who are you not bothering? You're not bothering yourself. You're not bothering me.
Right.
Like,
I imagine when you're a mostly insane subspecies of human who somehow has been living off the radar for 200 years, it's hard to sum up your ethos in a pithy one-liner.
Mm.
I imagine it's tough. So, you know, we take, we don't bother. You know, valiant effort. But
I mean,
maybe...
she might as well have just said YOLO.
Yeah.
Like, that kind of encapsulates the philosophy as well. The other thing is, like, they're sitting on this giant landfill that just stretches as far as the eye can see. It can only be expelled. You can't find a real landfill that would look like this, so they have to express it through a matte painting. How has no one found them yet? Mm-hmm. Like, a landfill would be one of the first places you'd go scavenge for, like, car batteries, gas, parts for your vehicle, like all this concentrated useful shit that you would need.
Right.
Like people pay for the privilege to go into junkyards and pull shit out of it today. How is this some kind of prime hideout spot?
I don't know. I think they just had the cool idea of, wouldn't it be awesome if people are living in these buried shuttle or freight containers?
So it's essentially the two dump trucks dumping...
Right.
Salt on zombies.
It'd be cool if, and no thought
that, like, how this actually happens and how did this culture arrive and
or
how did they decide to wear all black clothes? Like, you know, that's the discipline to which they adhere to this weird ass lifestyle is the other thing that's bizarre. I don't know. I don't get it. Anything else we want to say before we move on?
No.
Ezekiel does another one of these not visits to Carol, which, oh my God.
Yeah.
How many more of these can we take before... Like, this is the sixth time. The whole, oh, we're not here, really. We're just...
Right, and obviously it's just a setup for Daryl, for her to be, like, annoyed by another knock on the door.
I get
and
it.
Think that Ezekiel's come back and
yeah.
find out it's Daryl and be surprised, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Plus, I think...
The stronger portion of the scene, obviously, is when Daryl arrives.
Well, it's getting to the point where, like, I hate to say this because, you know... This is like every time – this is like everyone's rationale for disrespecting people's wishes. Well, what – they don't really want to be left alone. But at some point, Carol's still hanging around that spot where everyone's bothering her. I got to ask, if she really wanted to be left alone, wouldn't she just like vamos?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, get the fuck out of there. I don't I'm starting to think that maybe she really does like people showing concern for her. Anyway, as you mentioned, Jerry offers her some fucked up cobbler that he stored improperly in his backpack. She dismisses them. There's a knock at the door. She opens up as if to say, "What the fuck do you want?" And this time it's Daryl.
Yep.
And they have a real moment, and Daryl kind of chokes up and says, "Why do you go?"
Yeah.
Which is super effective because Daryl has been abandoned by several important people. It's like his whole life has been a series of abandonments.
Yeah.
And him and Carol did have a special bond of some indeterminate maternal, paternal, yeah. sexual nature. I don't really quite understand it, but
it was 5 years ago, so yeah. I'm having trouble even remembering it other than
right.
some kind of flower that they exchanged at some point.
Right, there was a Cherokee rose yeah. and then Daryl realized he was secretly gay, and but right. and then he maybe found room in his heart for a teenager, and then Carol got some smoke in his eyes, and then she showed him a book about kids being molested, and now we're here wherever we're at. That's the whole 7 year saga, I think, of Carol and Daryl.
I think so, but there is a connection between the characters.
There
and it feels genuine and natural.
I'm talking a lot of shit about the scene, but this actually worked.
And over the years, you know, every time they've interacted, we have continuously pointed out how good that stuff is. This is one of the things that this show gets right, is the relationship between Daryl and Carol.
Right. Back at the Trash Society, Rick and Gabriel have a moment, and Gabriel asks, "Why did you smile?" And Rick responds, "I saw the dailies of what I look like in front of this fucking CGI backdrop, and it's hilarious." Rosita and Tara have a scuffle about the gun mission. Rosita wants to do the gun mission now. Tara and everybody else want to take the supplies back to Alexandria so, you know, they don't all fucking starve. And so the Rick and Aaron can get medical treatment. And Rosita is just a giant, huge bitch for no real reason.
Well, no real reason. She lost Abraham.
But this fucking show, how many times does someone lose someone important and instead of... Like, there's only...
She's tried. I mean, don't tell me Rosita has not fucking tried to take matters into her own hands.
I know, and she got... And it... So, I thought the way they wrote and directed the episode in which Eugene was ripped from them, that she played like, oh, I see the error of my way. I had my irrational freak out that endangered the group, and in specifically one individual who just the episode before warned me that this very thing would happen, and now I've learned my lesson. And two episodes from later, she's like, no, fuck all that.
Well, she's learned a lesson. She has, like, she's not down with the methods that are... wasting time, biding time.
Honestly defending this, or are you just trying to see if you can make my head explode?
No, I'm honestly defending it. Rosita has learned that she can't do it herself.
Okay.
But Rosita is fed up with the bullshit of waiting around and trying to come up with some grand plan. She wants to take action. She just knows she can't
do
it alone.
So then she offers to go do it herself if no one else will help. So did she really? What lesson did she learn?
Does she? I mean, she goes with the group. It's not like... She's off on her own at the end.
I don't
know.
I thought she said, well, fine, I'll do it myself. And then Tara says, no, we cannot split up the group. And that Rosita said, fuck. She essentially said, fuck you, and stormed off.
I don't know. I skipped half of the junkyard scenes.
Fair enough.
So,
anyway, the proconsul of the trash planet intones, guns soon, or else. And they do that thing where the council finishes each other's sentences, and like, I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Rick swipes a cat statue, which is a nice nod to like 3-4 seasons ago. When him and Michonne first started palling around, and she first started realizing that she could carry again. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
And he also,
as part of a better show, would be excellent.
Yeah. He also tells Tara, hey, you can tell us where not to look, which she knows exactly where to look. She could take them to the seaside right now.
Yeah.
But she's not going to.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing is, like, there's a point where they're talking about guns, lots of guns, and, like, Tara actually fingers her little bracelet that she got from this Oceanside, and I'm like, man, that pretty heavy-handed there.
Sure is.
The ham-fisted bacon gauntlet tradition is alive and well in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So we get more Carol and Daryl, and Carol explains that, I don't want to kill anymore, but I know I would if they hurt. If anyone hurt our people, but there wouldn't be anything left of me after that. Then Carol asked Daryl if anyone got hurt, which I think was her stealing herself to go back into Carol Rambo mode. And Daryl lies and says, no, everyone's all right. The Rick worked out a deal like Ezekiel and everything's hunky-dory. And I thought it was really good. I really liked the touch where, like, you know, they hug and they leave. And Carol does this, like, dance on the porch debating whether she should go after him or, you know, like, I felt like that was really well acted.
Yeah.
The thing is, I just don't know about this thesis about why is Carol, and they haven't really convinced me about why Carol thinks that there would be nothing left of her if she defends the people that she loves. Like, I don't understand what the show is trying to tell us here.
I think she is deathly afraid of going back to Rambo, Carol Rambo.
Right. She doesn't want to go berserker anymore.
Right. And she thinks it's a slippery slope, a little too slippery.
Yeah, I get
for
that.
Her to control.
I just don't know. I don't know that I agree with the moral calculus there, which is fine. I guess I don't have to.
Yeah.
Anyway, Daryl then.
I mean, it's like it's like, you know, an alcoholic who refuses to drink at all, and you say, "Oh, well, why couldn't you just have a drink or two?" Well,
yeah,
they
but
can't
like,
because they don't have the ability to control that.
But if you're Jackie Chan and you're in Drunken Master 2 and drinking obscene amounts of alcohol is the only way you can transform into the drunken fighting master and save your whole society from having its culture appropriated and thieved wholesale, then you fucking get drunk and you do to get you get you, you like that's
unless
the thing,
you care
like,
about whether or not it destroys you.
So you value your own sanity and sobriety over the people that you love?
I can't really fault
because that's the
for
thing.
That.
It's like,
I mean,
it's just a fundamentally selfish act. So okay. I guess they're changing Carol's character to be fundamentally selfish, and it's a false equivalency because, like, you know, in reality there is it's the opposite. With people give in their alcoholism, they destroy their lives and the people around them that care about them.
Sure.
This is almost like for whatever reason Popeye refusing to eat spinach. Like, so I get it. It's destructive to Carol, but like sometimes what are you willing to die for? What are you willing to lose yourself for?
Sure. So, I mean, these are all questions that the show is asking. But
I don't know why we're giving it a pass because these are not unique or interesting questions just because we really like Daryl and Carol.
So I don't think there is a unique or interesting question under the sun, but in as much as you want to see a not unique and uninteresting question answered in an interesting and unique way, I don't think they're doing a terrible job here.
Yeah, I'm not.
I think the early going with like Morgan and Carol was too much for me. I mean, all the moralizing that happened there, it was flip-flopping every episode. That was really annoying. I think they're rounding into something that is a little more polished here, a little more interesting and nuanced.
I mean, I guess you're right. First of all, I disagree that there's nothing new. I think there are things new that they could try in the show, and for whatever reason, they are still dragging their feet about getting to that point. That's the frustration I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
Morgan finds Daryl communing with Shiva. She lets him pet her. He says that the other thing that they talked about in the previous scene is whether Ezekiel's all right. And Carol vouches for him. The tiger vouches for him. That's good enough for Daryl, which actually kind of makes... That makes a lot of hillbilly sense. And Daryl says to Morgan, you need to make this happen. You need to bring the kingdom into the fight. And whatever you're holding on to, it's already gone, man. You need to wake the hell up. But then Morgan, I think, correctly says, if you really believed that, you would have told Carol the truth, and you didn't, because if you had, she would have been here. Mm-hmm. And that this seems like, I think this is actually my best back and forth with the whole episode, because it's an honest characters yeah. honestly talking about what they really think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having a bit of a conundrum there.
Yeah, and I like the pressure that's being put on Morgan as well. You know, mm-hmm. it's...
Yeah, he's
now,
not
Daryl's
off.
On the warpath.
Right.
You know, the savior situation is becoming more and more untenable every time they meet, every interaction they have. At some point, Morgan is going to flip that switch.
Yeah.
I think.
I just, and Daryl heads back to the hilltop to get ready. I just, when they say that they want to hold on to something, I guess that's fine. I just don't understand how your desire to hold on to something when your friends and family need you override. I mean, that just doesn't feel like an authentic decision. Like, I feel like I'm conditioned to think of those people as weak and foolish.
Plenty of people are weak and foolish.
Sure, they're not usually the heroes of dramatic television involving zombies, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
it could be just a tragic hero sort of thing, you know?
Do we want reality from our television? Do we want a heightened reality, like a better version of reality? Like, when we say something is realistic, what do we actually mean? And I think The Walking Dead consistently fucks up the balance there, where it's like...
Oh, I agree with that, yeah.
Okay, and this is just another example of it. And I'm not saying that Kirkman's original comics are perfect, because they're not, but my God, they're not nearly this lopsided and aimless and lacking of confidence, lacking in narrative confidence. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where it comes from, but I don't really want to talk about it, because we've had this yeah. discussion every single season.
Right.
So that's it. That's the end of the episode. Daryl heads off to the hilltop.
You know what time it is, right?
Time to pay the bills.
Pay those bills. Pay them with a big Audible sponsorship.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. It's time to listen to some audiobooks. Right. We got to get through this ad so I can get back to listening to all my audiobooks.
Yeah. I've listened to audiobooks. Do you?
I do.
You must.
I do.
I actually mostly listen to audiobooks now instead of actually reading. Because, you know, you can do it while you're doing other things. I mm-hmm. think that's the benefit of listening versus reading. It's why people listen to podcasts, and it makes perfect sense. The Audible will be sponsoring podcasts. Like you heard up at the beginning of the episode, you can get a free audiobook with a 30-day trial if you go to audible.com/baldmove and use... you don't even have to use a promo code. You just go there, and it kind of knows that, hey, Bald Move sent you there. I actually recently checked out a book that you got in the mail like last week
yeah.
and that I think could really help our listeners as they watch The Walking Dead, as they consider the material of this uh-huh, podcast. Uh-huh. It's called 10% Happier. It's by Dan Harris.
Maybe that's what Carol was reading by the fireplace.
It might have been.
Trying to figure out how to be 10% happier in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, and it's essentially this. You might have heard of Dan Harris, actually, because he is a news anchor.
Mm-hmm.
He was for a very long time. I think he still is. But he wrote this book, 10% Happier, and it's kind of all about his struggle with what he was doing and the stress related, and how he learned that meditation was really a tool that would benefit him. And it takes you through like his whole journey from thinking meditation is a ridiculous, silly thing that only hippies do and yogis and all these weird people do, into something that can actually help you in your everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, you don't have to devote all your time to it, but, mm-hmm. you know, the time you do devote to it, it benefits you everywhere else. And I actually found that book really interesting. I haven't been able to practice it as much as I would like. I try it every once in a while. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. And I think the book is pretty good inspiration. Yeah, I would recommend that if you're having trouble swallowing the trash people in this episode, maybe do a little meditation, maybe go to audible.com/baldmove and check out Dan Harris's meditation book, 10% Happier. I think you will be 10% happier. If you're wondering how to spell Audible, it's audible.com/baldmove. Like I said, you could also listen to it in your car. That's what I do. You know, you can't make more time, but what you can do is make the most of it. If you want to turn your chores or your commute time into something more with a free trial at Audible, go to audible.com/baldmove to start now.
Hey, everybody, we're back for the Pay the Bills Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. We want to talk about the Club Bald Move. If you go to club.baldmove.com, you can sign up. And you get a lot of cool features. The one I want to highlight this week is the Live Watch, which we did a lot over the Christmas break. We also had, I think, one for the ages last night. It's like, yeah. I think you've gotten the impression that like we had a lot of fun watching this live. Well, the Live Watch allows you to get into our studio, sit on the couch with us, and get the watching this crazy episode with Jim and Aaron experience. All the original Star Trek jokes and Galaxy Quest jokes and Mila Jovovich, Resident Evil jokes, just jokes on jokes with this episode. It was a lot of fun. I heard a lot of feedback from people. What it is we watch it in real time, but we have a visual syncing device so that if you want to later watch the episode on iTunes, mm-hmm. or if you want to watch it if you're on the Pacific Coast, it's there anytime. You queue up the video, you sync it up with the thing you're watching on television, and then we essentially are in the room now joking with you with The Walking Dead.
If you've seen like Mystery Science Theater, it's essentially that with a visual sync or riff tracks or whatever.
Yeah, which I think is easier to use than the audio sync. It's much quicker to sync up. And a lot of people I've seen like snap it in their like Xbox One thing. And so it makes it super easy. Once you get it synced up once, it's just going to be synced up and you can watch your Walking Dead in full screen.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different ways to consume it. That's one of the many features of Club Bald Move, the exclusive features that you can only get by signing up. So if you like our content and you want more of it, there are a lot of ways you can sign up monthly, quarterly, yearly, whatever fits your budget. And if you're only a Walking Dead fan, don't care about the rest of this, you can just do quarterly or month to month. Or if you like our stuff year-round, you can save a little bit of money by taking the annual subscription. Either way, if you want to support our podcast and get even more great Bald Move content, and incidentally, skip the several minutes of advertising that sometimes we inflict upon you to pay the bills, because you get ad-free feeds. So many great features. It's a cornucopia of savings and values. Go to club.baldmove.com and help support us doing our thing. What do you got for feedback, Jim Jones?
I have Bill from Houston. Says, don't know if this is just an Easter egg or if there's some kind of deeper thematic purpose, but the truck behind Richard and Daryl during the big fight about Carol is the big rig from Smokey and the Bandit.
Shit,
and he sent a picture along.
Yep, I meant to mention that because I saw an article about that.
Yeah, I had written it down in my notes and I purposely like waited until Bill brought it up.
So did they run out of zombie and horror films to give homages to, and just like, yeah, we're gonna start just doing like, oh, everybody likes Smokey and the Bandits.
Yeah.
Next week we're gonna do a Short Circuit reference. We're gonna find Johnny Five.
Yeah,
he's gonna be the perfect zombie killer, and people will swallow it because they've swallowed the dreadlock ninja, they've swallowed the Shakespeare in the Park guy, the tiger, and now Trash City. They're ready for Johnny Five.
Here's the problem with Trash City, is that there was nothing cool about it.
No.
The coolest thing was that Walker, which had nothing really to do with the people there in Trash City.
Plus, they gave him an uncool name, Milton. Like, what the... That just asks more questions than... Or maybe it's Milhouse. That's even
Wilson
worse.
Or something?
Maybe it's Winslow.
Winslow, yeah. Right. The other things were fundamentally cool, right? A tiger with this fucking king is fundamentally cool.
Like, you can
cool.
see, like, when they unleash the tiger, it's probably going to be very cool. Like,
a ninja with badass spinning dreadlocks, awesome.
Yeah, and she's lopping off things' heads by the dozen. That's actually visually cool.
Right.
These were... I mean, say what you will about Star Trek The Next Generation, it is not, especially in the first few seasons, cool.
No.
It is not cool.
No, not
like,
at all.
It doesn't even get even close to being cool until, like, I don't know, Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
When the uniforms get collars and Riker grows out a beard, it kind of gets cool.
Yep.
Like, it's high school nerd cool.
All right, Cheryl says, according to the internet, Kirkman has officially confirmed that Jesus will be gay on the show. I've seen some pretty homophobic reactions to this news around the internet. Do you guys have any words of wisdom for those who seem to be unable to wrap their heads around the fact that LGBT people exist in the zombie apocalypse?
Have they not seen The Wire?
Yeah.
Like, one of literally the most badass, fully realized, awesome characters in all television history was an openly kiss a man on the mouth, gay, homosexual, and if you don't think that, like, I'm
well, I don't know what specifically the reactions have been.
I don't know.
If people are saying, well,
I've been on the internet long
enough
to
guess,
know,
but
yeah,
sure.
Right.
It's like, just a guess.
It's just like, you know, Dumbledore is gay. Oh, what the fuck? Ah, you know, it's like these people have this knee-jerk reaction, and it's just, it's honestly embarrassing, and it's juvenile and adolescent.
Sure.
Like, oh, this doesn't fit my preconceived idea of what a gay person can be, so thus it must be stupid and dumb. Like,
right.
That's
mean,
the definition of provincial and immature.
LGBTQ... I feel like I should just say the whole alphabet, but all of those people come in all different stripes.
Sure.
Everyone comes in all different stripes, and if you think that that's not true, you just don't know anything.
No, I've heard say that there's not a crazy percentage, but like along the population mean of like football players that are gay.
Sure.
Rugby players that are gay, basketball players that are gay. Like, think of the most macho, like,
it has
like
nothing to
special
do with.
There was a Navy SEAL that's now a transgendered woman.
Right.
Like, you can't find a more badass person on the planet. Yeah. So get the fuck over yourselves. People can be whatever the hell they want, and what they do with their dicks or vaginas or genetic code is completely aside from the issue.
What if they try and make it distinctive, add their distinctiveness to their own?
That's fine. If they want to, Borg Queen should be able to marry Lil Cutis if they want to, man.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that. And if Lil Cutis is consenting to it, right. I don't think it's cool to just kidnap the guy off his own bridge and reprogram his brain so he'll fuck you. Like, that's not consent, as I recognize it.
I feel like the Borg Queen data strategy is better. You gotta entice him.
Right.
You gotta tempt him.
Right. I mean, I hear people say that, and I just hear, like, I have never had a substantial conversation with any gay person.
Right.
And I've not cracked a book or read a magazine or newspaper, and like that might be elitist, but it's probably also true. So it's not my problem to fix. I at this point, it's like society will move on past that position. It kind of honestly already has, like with Omar Little and Jesus and, you know, transgendered Navy SEALs, society kind of has, so... Catch up.
Yeah, I mean, there are still some holdouts.
I get it.
For sure, a lot of them.
That's what they are, you know?
Yeah. So Nola asks, or says, a lesson from tonight's episode is that the show works best when it leans on the characters' shared history. Daryl and Carol's scenes were really moving because they felt earned. Too often the show doesn't highlight the shared history of some of our favorite characters. For instance, Carol and Michonne have never had a scene alone together, and Carol and Daryl both only ever had one or two scenes alone with Glenn. Carol finding out about Glenn's death would have been an even greater impact if we saw more of their relationship, and Daryl's guilt would be even more gut-wrenching if they had shared more screen time. Instead, we often get stuck with pairings like Daryl and Dwight, Glenn and Noah, or Glenn and Tara. I get that the old characters help bring in the new ones into the fold, but it feels like the show is always building up new relationships instead of paying off old ones. What do you think?
Yes.
Okay.
And especially when you think of that they've had 7 seasons of television to form a relationship. Like, I'm thinking about, like, what Next Generation had, like, go whole hog on the Star Trek thing. Star Trek had, what, 8 seasons, Next Generation?
Yeah.
Like, imagine a pairing, and they had screen time. Like, Data hung out with Troy, Worf hung out with Troy... Crusher hung out with, went on assault missions with Geordi and Picard. Like, they, every possible permutation, just if nothing else, because the writers probably got bored and they want to mix things up. It's kind of embarrassing that you can't point to a scene where Glenn and Daryl had a heart to heart when you've had 7 going on 8 seasons to develop that, or that Carol and Glenn never had a heart to heart.
Right.
And I don't, like, it's the, you know, I mean, to me, it doesn't bother me because, like, I can read between it. Like, I've never seen Daryl take a shit. Pretty sure he uses the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will take it that these people being together since day one probably had those things just off screen, so it works for me. Like, I absolutely believe Carol would be apoplectic, or however you pronounce it. Angry. Very, very angry and beside herself to find out that Glenn was dead, if not Abraham. So, yeah.
Yeah, I do think it's tough with an ensemble cast. but it's not impossible. And there are shows that nail this. I mean, sure. If you look at Game of Thrones, Game of Thrones is fantastic at this.
Especially if you know, here's the thing. If you spent more than a single second planning out your seasons, or if you went like and maybe, I don't know, followed the fucking comic book that you've had, you would see, hey, I know this person's going to die, and I'm going to hinge a plot on this person, you know, reacting to it. So I need to make sure that emotional connection's built so it really lands for this. But they don't care, and they don't spend that time and thoughtfulness.
Right.
So are people, I mean, Are people listening to this podcast just to hear me say these same things over and over again?
I think so. At this point, they have to be, right? Because that's all we do.
I'm starting to get really self-conscious about, because I'm not a hack about just trotting out the same trite observations again and again.
Yeah, I mean,
I like making funny Star Trek jokes, but like, yeah, the failures of characterization and writing are just nothing new to say anymore.
Chris Hook says, "It's a miracle. Daryl is speaking in full sentences, and I can understand his lines without closed captioning." Could you? Because he was sitting at that table. I couldn't tell what he was saying.
Yeah.
He said something about eating.
No!
Carol brought him some food, so he must have said something she got. Is there some psychic connection between them?
He goes on,
he has a harder edge to him this half season, like he did in seasons 2 and 3, but the scene with Carol still shows his softer side. I feel like we have the OG Daryl back. What do you think of his arc so far in 7B? I mean, we're only 2 episodes in. You know, he just got out of the slammer, the Guantanamo-esque slammer.
Here's the thing.
He's doing all right, though.
In retrospect, are you more or less chagrined that they spent 2 episodes with him in the slammer torturing him psychologically? Because that doesn't seem to have any lasting effect on him whatsoever.
You're right.
Sometimes I forget about the treadmill and how, like, okay, well, maybe this will pay off or maybe it'll be awesome. Mm-hmm. And, like, even if Daryl's the guy who kills Negan at this point, how much more satisfying, because Daryl, the reason Glenn died is because Daryl couldn't handle the fact that Negan killed one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need any more motivation for him to want Negan dead.
Sure.
And he's already utterly rejected people with credos less offensive than the Saviors. So, like, seriously,
so
what was that 2 hours of television about?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just trying to reinforce that Daryl can't be broken. Because, you know, we had discussed that.
I saw
that,
the
like,
man destroy a
broken?
Tank with his bare fucking hands. I never conceived that he could be broken.
Yeah, we were both saying, there's no way. Daryl's not going to break.
Yeah. Like, honestly, the more interesting thing to do with him would be to broken him.
Sure.
Because that would have been genuinely shocking and maybe interesting new territory to break.
Yeah. Anyway, Alex G says, Norman Reedus said that not telling Carol about Glenn and Abraham was a quote-unquote selfless act, both because he wants her back with the group and because she would be an asset in the fight. Gimple said, we might even consider his lie heroic. Was Daryl's decision to lie heroic, cowardly, or neither?
I'm really shocked to hear them both frame it that way. I thought it was a compassionate act. I don't think it was heroic. I don't think it served any purpose to get her back to the group.
Yeah, they framed it as selfless, and I think that's true. Because, you know, she would be a huge asset in a battle.
Okay, sure.
She's an amazing fighter.
Maybe I misheard what they said, because I thought I got the opposite.
Did I say selfish?
No, I think you said selfless, but I think I might have heard a not or an ant or a, something in there. I must have missed something in translation, but... I don't think it's heroic. I think it's more just like a very compassionate thing.
Yeah. Layla says, how are you feeling about Carol's arc these days? If Daryl told Carol the truth, it would have moved her plot forward out of her hermit life, but I think it's safe to assume that she won't stay in the Carol cabin forever. If the season ultimately leads to Carol mounting up to charge into battle, will you feel this arc paid off, or is it a lost cause for you?
I mean, I'm still open to Carol doing awesome things and poignant things, and I can still... I mean, that's the thing. Like,
and I could see it destroying her. Like,
I mean, that's why I guess I still maintain the fact I'm a fan of The Walking Dead, because I can still get emotionally involved in Carol and Daryl, even though all this silliness is swirling around me.
Right.
So I'm still invested. Like, you know, I'm still invested in Carol and Rick, as I often... I mean, sorry, Carl and Rick. Rick and Michonne. There's a lot of characters I still care about. It just...
Mm-hmm.
I sometimes question what the writers are as invested as I am.
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that she comes out of the Carroll cabin. I don't think she's gonna, you know, have Richard's plan come to fruition and get killed by it. I think she's gonna have to fight.
Yeah,
and what it does to her is, you know, still up in the air. Maybe she survives it. Maybe she doesn't. Maybe it breaks her. Finally, but you know, either way, I think she's gonna have to deal with it.
It would be interesting if somehow Carol. Ooh, are we doing a spoiler section?
No.
Okay, can we?
Sure, a very short one, I guess.
All right, I have a thought I wanted to offer up to the spoiler people about what would be cool for Carol to do.
Okay, Christine C says, okay, time for the ship-o-meter. Do you ship Carol and Daryl at this stage? I personally do, but I'm trying to determine if we learned anything new about the relationship in this episode that we didn't already know. Did you feel there were any new wrinkles added to the relationship which furthered their development? It's always been sort of ambiguous what their exact relationship is. Is it romantic? Is it platonic? It always kind of felt borderline romantic and borderline like mother-son sort of relationship. And I don't know if that's just because of their age difference, but it sometimes bordered on maybe romantic, but I don't remember their shit from season two all that well.
So here's my stream of consciousness. I think that Carol absolutely wanted to jump Daryl's bones circa season three and four. She's come to depreciation that he is so badly damaged from the abuse and trauma that he's gone through in his life that he is either, you know, asexual or is threatened by his sexuality or in some ways can't express it. And I thought it was interesting that he also had some chemistry with Beth, who was a child, mm-hmm. which I could almost see as him, like she's not threatening to him because his kind of sexuality is very stunted and adolescent as well. In a way that, like, a grown-ass woman like Carol might threaten him. Like, oh, God, she might have expectations or she's got experience or and it scares him off. But so I kind of feel like that he's either damaged to the point that, like, he's not going to be able to have a normal sexual relationship with a woman or a man because there's been some speculation that maybe some of the kinship he feels towards Aaron and Eric is that he's a gay man himself. Or... it could be that he's just so damaged that he can't express that in any kind of healthy way, and that Carol is smart enough to pick up on that. Because she was shamelessly flirty with him. And then when they had their little 2x2 thing, and you know, she found that book about survivors of abuse and that Daryl was reading, that I feel like she kind of wised up and now they're just platonic.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess I used to ship Daryl and Carol, but now I think that, you know, Daryl would have to go through a significant amount of healing that he's not going to be able to do at this stage in the zombie apocalypse to be able to fully, you know, requite that love.
Yeah. We also had Cheryl, who emailed earlier, mentioned that Norman Reedus said in an interview that it felt like he was talking to his mother in some of these scenes. And I don't know if he meant that as an actor or a character, but I don't know. It's a wrinkle for sure. Johnny O says, I think one of Norman's all-time best pieces of acting on the show was when his voice cracked on the line, "Why'd you go?"
Yep.
Crushing. It seemed like Daryl was relieved to find Carol safe, but he was also hurt that she left the group and perhaps took it personally that she would leave him. How did you read the fragility of his performance in that scene? Exactly like you said. I mean, that was a really strong scene between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all it takes for Norman Reedus to, you know, open the floodgates on some people is for him to crack his voice, you know, in the right way. Because he doesn't show that emotion so often, right?
Yeah.
And so when he does, when he opens up a little bit, or doesn't even open up, but accidentally gives you a glimpse into what he's thinking and how he's feeling, it goes a long way. And I think that scene, that was expertly done.
And it makes you wonder how much better this episode would be if it wasn't, you know, encapsulated by the slide whistle clown show that was The Trash Society.
Right.
Like it's the fact that that works, even though in the background you got Rick and his Romulan lover going
you know, and doing their slide whistle thing and, you know, making fart jokes is kind of remarkable.
Yep. James P. says, as someone who had a slight Thanksgiving kitchen finger cut turn into an infection that required surgery, I'm calling bullshit on Rick's spike through the hand from the Metal Walker stunt. He says he slightly cut his finger and thought he cleaned it out and bandaged it enough, but 3 days later it swelled to twice the size and was incredibly painful, and the doctor said if you waited another day, it would have had to been amputated. Are we supposed to believe that Rick is going to be fine after that, having that dumpster-habitating Walker spike go through his hand, then climbing over piles of garbage with it, then nonchalantly hanging out during a classic Walking Dead moralizing round-robin discussion, and he's just going to be fine? This show does not care to talk about infection, which is surprising given the nature of the show.
Now, I will say that Rick went to the hospital for a gunshot wound.
Mm-hmm.
It seems entirely likely that they would have updated his tetanus and, like, all those other things. So he probably would have been more prepared than most. Like, that shit is like a 10-year booster.
But I can guarantee they're not going to even go there.
No. No.
They're not even going to mention it.
Like I'm saying, like, these spikes are attached to a rotting zombie who's been wallowing around in a rusty environment, metal environment, decomposing organic material environment, and including his own. And it just, yeah, like...
And then he literally climbs up a pile of trash.
Yeah.
Of waste.
Yeah.
No,
I know my cop buddy Matt. He like last year he got a scratch on patrol on his knee, through his BDUs and didn't think anything of it. And a week later, he's in a hospital fighting for his life, and he had to have 3 resections on his leg. He's in the hospital for like 6 weeks and those weird vacuum wound treatment, and they're just like, he still hasn't fully recovered. Like, there's scary shit out there. So, yeah, I think they're a little too cavalier with how much physical trauma that Rick's passion, you know, the passion of the Rick that he went through. But, you know, this is The Walking Dead, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
All right. Well, that's all I got. We're going to do a very small spoiler section after the music. So stay tuned if you want to hear that. You can send your feedback to walkingdead@baldmove.com. And I will get it compiled and considered for next week. I did some brutal cuts this week because I didn't want to talk very long about this episode. This was a giant pile of trash, and I did not want
to
deal with it.
Yeah. Literally. A badly composited one at that.
Yes. So, yeah, maybe the next week will be better, and I'll be more willing to include more emails. If you'd like to get your stuff in, walkingdead@baldmove.com. And if you want to hear the spoilers, stay tuned to watch the music. Until next week, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See you. Okay, so I want to know if they're going to keep Melissa around for another couple seasons. And the way they have this arc is there's 2 possibilities, I guess.
Are you guessing at that? Do we know? Like, has she...
This is a complete guess.
Okay.
I don't know if she wants it. I know she was one
but
of...
But if they do, okay.
She's one of the Darabont crew that's a... She's like the last of the big Darabont crew that is held out and... I guess my question is, if she's gonna sign up, what are they gonna do with her that's interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Because as I see it, she can come back and get through this thing and be essentially regular old Carol that we know and love, which is not very interesting. She can die, which is interesting and kind of, you know, it's a big major character death that The Walking Dead likes to do, or she can snap. She can do exactly what she does. She survives. She saves the day, but she loses whatever fragile mental balance that we have. And we get the chance to explore, like, instead of a shitty 3-episode arc of how the governor became who the governor is, we actually get to see someone that we care about and empathize with turn into a monster.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about, I'm not really up on the Whisper line, but I've read a few more since the last time we talked about it. And they've got this... The Whisperers are this really weird post-apocalyptic cult. The way they understand it is they pretend to be zombies.
They're not supposed to be trash people, right?
They're not supposed to be. I don't think the trash people are a nod to these because this is all post
the jump forward.
Gotcha.
And they like don't use names. They have like Alpha as their leader, and Beta is like the second in command, and they're like extremely ruthless, and like they've like eliminated all human emotion from their equations and whatnot. I think it would be interesting, like, if we think Carol dies, but she comes back after time jump as like the leader of the Whisperers.
Okay.
And we can kind of see, like, you know, people always talked about, like, oh, I'm trying to hold on to something. Well, what happens if I can't hold on to something? And we've seen people that have not held on to that something and become the governor or, you know, the hospital administrator of Slapdown or whatever. We've never actually seen someone that we care about. Like, Rick's always gone to that limit and, like, had the psychotic break but then come out stronger. Mm-hmm. Like, what happens when that just doesn't happen and you just become that evil thing that you're always been warning people about? I wonder, like, you know, I'd like to hear from other comic fans, like, what they think of that take. Because the other thing is, like, Carol's supposed to be dead. Supposed to be dead a long time ago.
Uh-huh. At the prison, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, this Kirkman remix
looks McBride
is fucking with them. So
yeah,
I think it would be interesting because then she could go on and do other things, and she could only, you know, she'd only have to, you know, she's essentially got Jeffrey Dean Morgan's load at this point.
And she'll become a guest star in the future as opposed to, like, cast regular.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Liz G actually wrote in and said essentially that. So I think
she could be the leader of the Whisperers?
You know, speculating, like hoping maybe that would be interesting. So you're lining up
See you there, Liz.
Yeah, a lot of our listeners have kind of similar ideas. I think it'd be interesting.
And I mean, something
like I said,
it's probably
a welcome break for Melissa.
What it's got going for it is that we've never seen that before.
Yeah.
And it'd be another way they could use the time jump to, like, you know, you kind of see the trajectory she's on. Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks she died in whatever the all-out war is going to be, and then she comes back, and there's like the mysterious of like what's going on with the Whispers, and you meet the first time, and it's her, and she doesn't even give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, how do Rick and company deal with that? So
could be interesting.
Yeah, but I'm also, man, next week, to the extent that I thought the attempts to break Daryl and to show Daryl integrating into the Savior Complex was a waste of time and dumb. Doing that plot again with fucking Mullet,
mm-hmm.
I am not looking forward to next week.
It's an extra long episode, too.
Oh, goody.
Yeah.
Because then I can see more bullshit Dwight. Like, the other thing is like, oh, I haven't seen a good Dwight and Sherry scene for a good long while.
Right.
Can I get some more Dwight and Sherry?
No more smoking scenes between them, though. Right?
Why not?
There shouldn't be. I thought as we left it, they were done with those scenes.
Whatever.
Or at least
you think she
was.
You think The Walking Dead is ever going to be done with a particular scene?
Maybe it just won't be in the stairwell. It'll be in, I don't know.
I saw something like there was some goofy image macro on the Walking Dead subreddit about like the writer's room, you know, like the writer's room word jumble, and they had like, you know, like this grid that had, you don't know what it's like out there, I get it now, we've got to do things we didn't know we thought we could do, like just all these like fucking like, yeah. it's unreal how much of the dialogue of the show revolves around these 20 phrases.
Yeah, it's like they had two good ideas and they just keep harping on them.
Yeah, and the thing is, we should, like, I just feel like in another alternate universe where Darabont's maintained control of this, we are like two seasons beyond all out war, and we're mm-hmm. in truly interesting territory. You know, we still haven't caught up with the comics, but we're in really interesting territory, and these things haven't been beaten to the ground. And the budget's twice as high, and you don't have bullshit Star Trek The Next Generation level matte paintings. And sometimes I cry a little bit on the inside.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, would Darabont have done the show in the format that they want? Because I don't see that guy doing this open-ended show. I don't see him doing something without some kind of end date.
But that's the other hallmark. We've not seen anything like this in the golden era of television, where it's essentially we are going to keep making these until people stop watching it.
Yeah.
One of the hallmarks of the golden age was, I have a story.
It might be 3 seasons. It might be 5 seasons. It might be 5 and 2 half seasons. Hello, Breaking Bad. But right. It's going to end. And this,
with good reason. I mean, that's why the format exists, for good reason.
Right.
It keeps things moving. It makes sure that the show ends before it gets terrible.
Right.
Whereas the inevitability of this show is it will be poorly rated when it ends.
Right.
It's going to go out with a whimper.
And that's sad. Like, I mean, yeah. You know, and that's for – I remember back in the day, like, the best you could hope for on these you know, episodic television shows is you get like an All Good Things,
right?
You send off for these beloved characters after the ratings dip to a certain level that there's enough money they can make one final last season where you kind of get some closure with these characters. But the halftime, it just end mm-hmm. in the middle, and there's no closure at all. And I feel like you kind of owe it to the fans to have a story and tell the damn story and then fucking move on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would have been what Darabont would probably have wanted to do, but who knows?
And also, it's like clearly something about the material spoke to him that he wanted to adapt it, and he would have done something interesting with it.
Yeah,
but whatever. We'll
That's
see.
It. Yeah,
we'll see. We'll see if they can. I wonder if they can break the mullet. Do you think they can break him?
Yes, yes, they can break him.
Yeah,
immediately they're going to break him. This is going to be the anti-Daryl.
Yeah. He's going to be like, he's going to show up like, I will do anything you want me to do, okay?
Right.
I will make bullets.
Yeah.
I will role play, King Lear's court. I'll be your jester. I'll do whatever.
I'll be your Jerry.
I'll be your Jerry.
All right.
Butt sex. You want butts? it's on. I'll bite your dick. What do you want? What do you want, man? Just don't stop
that really
hurting me.
Gets Dwight off. You know, he got a taste of it, and he just
that's right.
He can't get enough now.
He's realized now that that's the reason he doesn't want Negan's wives,
because none of them are willing to.
Because none bite of like he's had the sublime pleasure of another man biting his dick,
right?
And that's what gets it hard now,
right?
And you know, you can't go back to the farm once you've seen Puri, I guess.
It's true. So all right. True.
Get me out of here, Jim.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.